Welcome to Pretty Lies and Alibis. Let's seek the truth and travel the long road to justice together.
What you know, alibiers, hope you're having a great Monday. I'm Gigi. I'm going to do this in two parts because it's a pain for me to have to upload a really long episode to YouTube and export it after it's been edited. So this is kind of the quicker way to do it. Plus, you might want it in little bite sizes where you don't have to pause and come back. So big thank you to everybody who donated over the weekend and bought merch. You guys are eating up the new merch. I appreciate it. I have fun designing that stuff now. I've kind of grown to love it. I'm going to be doing it frequently just because it's fun. So before we get started, oddest song banned from the radio to me was I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. Go figure. It's so scandalous, y'all. I guess it had to be banned. But yeah, so the prosecution is finished with their closings. So because it was so late when she finished, I think total, if you add it up, it was maybe 5 hours-ish, maybe a little more. I'm not 100% sure. I didn't do the math before I got on here. But to give the defense a fresh start, they'll begin their closings in the morning. And then if the state wants to present any rebuttal, they'll be allowed to do that before the jury goes to deliberate. So how do I think it went? I think the morning session was not great in a lot of ways. One big thing, by the way, I'm sitting here watching with my headphones on, got my monitor pretty much right in front of my face. And as she's showing photos of the victims, she goes with Frankie, y'all, and then she gets to Hannah Hazel, and bless it, she puts up the one picture of Hannah Hazel with a nursing cover on, clearly nursing baby Ruger. The next photo goes to a picture of Frankie laying dead in the bed, a picture of a baby after the murders, and then a photo of Hannah Hazel laying face down in the bed, covered in blood, breast exposed. And I don't know, to me, it seemed like 10 minutes before they got that off, but it was shocking. And I know, I don't think it was intentional. Some people think it was shock value. I do not. Her family was sitting in that courtroom, and it took me by surprise. Like, my heart dropped, because you're expecting to maybe see a picture of Hannah Hazel with her kids, and you see crime scene photos. It was not a good way to start this case. That was pretty much at the beginning. I thought before lunch it was a little just unorganized, and I think that rattled her when that photo was shown, and it just took forever to get it off the screen. But after lunch, I think she really did pick it up and did the best she could, given the fact that they are going after these charges with virtually no evidence against George other than the testimony of Jake and Angela. It's not personal. I'm not pro Wagner. It's just what it is. And everybody who's watched this trial that is on my Twitter today has, I don't think I've seen anybody say they have the evidence in their back pocket, but she did draw in the lies that George told, and when it benefited him. So I think after lunch, it went as good as it could for the state, given the fact that I'm still shocked that there's a lack of evidence in this case against George. But let's start with these closings. So initially, she thanks the jury for their patience and says they started this in July in a sweaty gym, and they've ended it to where when they walk outside, their teeth are chattering. And she apologizes for the amount of evidence they've had to sit through. She said, in the beginning, I said, these murders should have never happened. There was no reason for them to happen. And now you can appreciate the senselessness of these murders that were done out of suspicion. All the victims were unarmed and unsuspecting. So she goes into Frankie. He was 20. He loved his children, derby car racing, and his fiance. He just started a new job, and he was on the brink of the beginning of the rest of his life. He loved hunting and chicken fighting. He was not a drinker or involved in the marijuana business. Frankie's crime for which he got the death penalty was kissing his niece on the lips. George said Frankie was the type of man you'd have to go through to get to his family. So Hannah Hazel, Parker called a sidebar, actually, before the photos were shown. Don't know what it was about. She comes back and starts back up and says, her and Frankie and Ruger shared a home. She had a good relationship with Brentley's mother, Chelsea, which is Frankie's oldest son. She was there when Frankie took the last photo he would ever take in his life, which was of his sons laying together. Her crime was being there. At this point, the picture's been shown. It's graphic. I won't unsee it for sure. Bless Hannah Hayes. Bless all their hearts, man. You see something like that. We've not been able to see these crime scene photos. As you know, early in the trial, Judge Deering banned anything that showed blood. And certainly they weren't going to show the crime scene photos, even if the blood was allowed. But it was there on the big screen for everybody to see. She goes on to Chris Sr. saying that he was a hard worker at Big Bear Lake. He was a family man who provided for his family. You heard about his 4th of July fireworks, and we know he sold marijuana. It has nothing to do with this case. In the beginning, the investigation turned to that to make sure there was nothing connected. He was killed because he was the patriarch and would figure out who did it and potentially seek vengeance. He was an original target. Angela initially suggested snitching on Chris Sr.'s marijuana grow operation so that Hannah Mae would not have the support in the custody battle, but it got voted down. But ultimately, he was targeted because he was Hannah Mae's father and the patriarch of the family. She said Gary was the only one who had drugs in his system. She said he abused cocaine sometimes. He was from Kentucky and would come stay with Chris and work at Big Bear Lake some. He was described as goofy, and George told you he went and hunted with Gary in Kentucky. Gary's crime was simply being there. He had nothing to do with the suspicions the Wagners had. Kenneth was hardworking and generous. He would get up early and drive to his brother Chris's house to shower and go to work in Columbus. He would come home and often get dinner at Giovanni's and then go home for the evening. We heard from Kendra, his daughter, and she said he was very supportive of them. You heard from Donald Stone, who said how generous Kenneth was and would give family and non-family alike anything they needed if he could. He was killed because he was a strong guy. George said he considered Kenneth stronger than him. He may have sought revenge in the wake of the murders, and that's why he was killed. Dana was a loving mother and grandmother. You heard how she was going to watch Brentley the following day because Chelsea had called Frankie and asked if he could watch him at the last minute due to an illness at his daycare. You heard from Angela's own mouth how Dana was a good grandmother, taking the kids shopping and having little cookouts for them. She was a caregiver. She worked long hours at the nursing home. They had not moved in fully, but she kept an orderly home. You heard from Jake that Dana told Sophia to take her daddy and show him the new home. That was on those tapes when Jake was secretly recording, if you remember. She was trying to raise her kids as well as she could, and we know little Chris was grounded at the time from his car. She was not suspected of doing anything wrong for Sophia. She was just there. Based on Jake's testimony, they waited for her to get home. And then the prosecutor says, I don't know if that was so she wouldn't come home mid-homicide or they had made the decision she was going to die. I thought that was a little bizarre. That it seems clear they waited on her to get home so she could be one of the three. So Hannah Mae had just turned 19 and given birth to 5-day-old Kylie, and she was the mother of Sophia. She was going to school to become a nurse and got involved with Corey Holdren. We heard him testify how she sat with him and helped him through withdrawals, and he thought that was a huge act of love. Hannah Mae found out she was pregnant with Charlie Gilley's baby, and Corey met with Charlie and asked if he could raise his daughter. Corey was with Hannah Mae when Kylie was born. He cut the cord and named Kylie Kylie. Hannah Mae said Sophia was her world, and she refused to sign custody documents because of what had happened with Tabitha. She wasn't as easily manipulated as Tabby, who came from a broken home that didn't have a support system. Hannah Mae came from a home where there was support, and that was her crime. also that she wasn't manipulated by the Wagners and refused to sign the paperwork. They didn't think she did anything to Sophia, but when she was with her, Hannah Mae brought her around people they did not think she should. Little Chris was 16. He had just gotten his driver's license and was happy and proud of that. Nobody had anything bad to say about him, except he was the annoying little brother who tagged along when Hannah Mae would visit Jake, so Hannah Mae wouldn't be alone with Jake, per Chris Sr. and Dana's wishes. His crime, according to Angela, I'm not going to repeat it, y'all. There's allegations made against little Chris, and I think it's hogwash, so I'm not going to say it. We know George is involved. How? At the beginning, you heard any evidence I conveyed to you the best I could about the women in the Wagner's lives, and you may be wondering, why does that matter? I hope now you have a better feel for why that matters. The issue with the women and children in their lives should never have led to a drastic result, but it did. When Jake and Angela testified, you saw how their minds worked when dealing with the women who gave them children and when they lost control of the women. At this point, Judge Deering asked to see counsel. I don't know what that was about, but she comes back and starts talking about Tabitha. You heard about the interplay with family. George started the relationship when Tabby was 10 or 11, and you heard she was traumatized as a child and nobody was held accountable. Angela encouraged Tabby to lay down with George at a young age because he needed consoling due to something a grandparent said to him. After they were married, Tabby said Angela would rub George's back and talk about the type of sex they should have. They accused Tabitha of being physically abusive to Vine, and they accused her of trying to poison them. She wasn't allowed to have contact with her family, and when they learned she had been unfaithful after her marriage to George, you heard they took away her phone, factory reset it, and Angela kept it. Tabby hadn't seen her mother in a year. The night she fled, George hit her. Angela threw a 2x4 at her and threatened to get her gun. She bit George because he had his arm up. She was under a truck hiding, and Jake and Angela came out looking for her. Jake and George got in a truck and found her pedaling down the road on a bike with flat tires to try to make it to a gas station to call her mom. Hannah Mae verified this by calling Chelsea, who got a terrifying call from Hannah Mae that night saying she didn't have time to talk. They took her phone. She was using one of theirs. She said the Wagners threatened to cut her legs off if she tried to leave. She told this to Chelsea. They chased Tabby. Angela got a gun, and Jake and George went looking for Tabby. Chelsea was terrified and asked Hannah Mae if she was okay, and Hannah Mae asked her to please not tell anyone, but Chelsea told Chris Sr., which upset Hannah Mae because she was still living in the Wagner home at the time, and unfortunately, it came in between their relationship. You're going to hear that they didn't kill Tabby. They went to the courts and did it the right way, but Hannah Mae said her concern was if they got Tabby back into the house that night, something would have happened to Tabby. George called police at Jake and Angela's urging so Tabby couldn't report what happened that night, and it would be bad for George since he was seeking full custody. They falsified a police report to make her the aggressor, and she ended up with a disorderly conduct charge that she had to go pay for. Remember, George said he drove her to the courthouse and paid that for her. This gave them leverage. It took only 2 weeks for the papers to be typed up where she gives away her son completely unbeknownst to her. The paper said visitation would be reasonable, but the Wagners didn't live up to it because she was living with her perpetrator at the time. You will see the letters from Tabby to George from March 15th. Within 2 months, you can see she tells him she had talked to an attorney and she had sent 2 letters for George. She dropped off an Easter basket for Vine and asked to see him every Wednesday. Until their arrest, they're still working as a family to make sure Tabby never gets visits with Vine. You see the messages between Hannah Mae and Tabby about this. On the wires, they talk about staying low until June 7th, 2018, so George can claim abandonment. How about you let her see her son? Jake was having Hannah Mae get information on Tabby. George was monitoring Tabby's Facebook, and he wants you to believe this was after the split, but why would you hand out your password after you left? Then Jake and Angela were monitoring, and they shared information with George. There were screenshots of conversations. George wants you to think he monitored for a while, and then Angela did, and George asked her to stop. The prosecutor says, really? We know they called the cops on her, saying that they got an anonymous call. She had drugs in her car. Another false report to law enforcement to thwart her getting custody. And now it's time for a word from our paid sponsor of the week, BetterHelp. You know, it would be nice if life came with a user manual, such as when you have your first baby or you're navigating tough losses in life. Unfortunately, as we know, life does not come with a user manual. So when it's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. Navigating any of life's challenges can make you feel unsure, whether it's a career change, a new relationship, or becoming a parent. Therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of the challenging emotions and learn productive coping skills, which makes therapy the closest thing to a guided tour of the complex engine called you. Therapy can help you learn to cope with past trauma, can give you coping mechanisms to the problems in your life, and give you a neutral person to help navigate the problem, big or small, we all face in life. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with the therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/whattheworld. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/whattheworld. We know they called the cops on her, saying that they got an anonymous call. She had drugs in her car. Another false report to law enforcement to thwart her getting custody. We know Angela denies giving Tabby's baby anything. Maybe it was someone else in the house. At that time, she was still monitoring Tabby's Facebook, and Tabby was saying just because she cheated doesn't mean she's unfit. There has to be something more, and maybe this call was it. Now, she kind of jumped around there, but if you remember, Tabby said after Angela had her baby, the baby was acting weird, and she went to the hospital, and there was something in the baby's system. I can't remember exactly. It was some kind of a sedative, like for panic disorders. Talk about Hannah Mae. She was young, not 10 or 11, but 13, and Jake was almost 18 when they started dating. Everyone knows the story of meeting at the fairgrounds. She had a pet rabbit. They all remember that story. The Wagners tried to dominate her in spite of her being different than Tabby, and you see that in the messages with Jake. Jake chokes Hannah Mae. Hannah Mae calls her dad to pick her up and ends their relationship. I find it interesting, George said in his testimony, he wasn't home when it happened and he had no idea what happened. He's trying to convince us he was oblivious. Why? He's trying to say he knew nothing about the murders. And then she says, I don't have my glasses on. I'll try my best. And then she's reading text messages between Hannah Mae and Tabby. Hannah Mae said to Tabby, when Jake choked me, George brought up the fact that I got raped and nothing was done about it. I never told anyone because the person told me he would go away for a long time. If I could change time, I would, but now everyone knows what happens. Prosecutor said, it's a family affair. Jake chokes Hannah Mae and George is there telling her she got raped. Again, they think if you were violated and didn't report it, you are a danger to the kids. You see the journal entries from Angela about Sophia being sick or hurt when Jake got medication for Sophia. And when Hannah Mae said, I won't sign papers ever, they'll have to kill me first. Jake and Angela said this was shared, and that's when the plotting began. We know in January of 2016, the planning began and the purchases started. Jake had Samantha spy on Hannah Mae because Samantha lived close to Corey Holdren, but she stopped doing it when Angela called. Again, this family affair. She calls Beth Ann the linchpin in this case. When we started listening to them in 2018 on the wiretaps, we heard conversations and knew our theory of the case was correct. It's hard to believe 8 people lost their life over something so flimsy, but Jake and Angela testified to that. Jake had the audacity that she could call Beth Ann mom, meaning Sophia, And he explained to Sophia that Angela was her grandmother and not her mother, which was terrible to George and Angela because Vine thought Angela was his mommy. And George says now he'll have to tell his son the cold, hard truth. She invites the jury to listen to those wiretaps, by the way, and says George was repeating what Angela was saying to Jake. George said on the stand that Vine knew Tabby was his mom, so then what was the big deal? We hear conversations between George and Angela talking about Beth Ann and their conspiracy theories about her. We hear Jake and George in the truck, and George is going off. She doesn't have the exhibit number handy, and she mentions she will get it later. The call with George telling Jake Beth Ann had to leave. He didn't feel safe with the kids in the house with her. Jake isn't putting Sophia first, and Beth Ann knocks Sophia over to hug Jake first when he comes back home from being on the road. He says Beth Ann gets up at night and unlocks the door to put them all at risk on purpose. He's worried she will molest the kids or take them to a cult in Texas. If they move out, they have to leave Sophia because Jake won't protect her, but George says he would. It demonstrates everything. If only we had recordings leading up to the murders. Listen to the tapes and ask if this is something George would sit out. If Angela was saying the same things, George would be saying the same things too. Listen to the conversation between Jake and George because it embodies the thought George won't let anything happen to Sophia, to the point he will protect Sophia from Big Bad Beth. She says complete floozy allegations against Beth Ann, same as the Rodens. They whip themselves into a frenzy about her, and this call shows it's George and Angela leading the charge. Jake tells them they've lost their mind and they're paranoid and going off what-ifs and whatnots. It was happening with Angela and George. They accuse Beth Ann of being abusive to Sophia, but Sophia recanted because she did not like Beth. Jake never believed Sophia, but George and Angela did. Angela is keeping a journal where she talks about the poison attempt by Beth. They won't allow Beth to tell her own family where she lives, and we heard Jake and Angela confront Beth in the kitchen about the allegations and threaten to recreate the Walking Dead bat, beat her to death, burn the barn down, and bulldoze it. She called someone she thought was a friend who talked to Jake, and as we know, Jake minimized the incident, and she knew at that moment she needed to get out of there. She said George and Angela were pressuring Jake to get her out, and Jake was eventually caving to that idea. Beth said, "You can tell them I'm a risk to BCI and I can go to college." Before she leaves, she writes in her journal. George texts Angela the contents of the journal, so to think George isn't in the middle is not right. Beth talks about the controlling nature of the family in her journal. I invite you to look at that. The idea that George said he wanted to distance himself, saying the meetings weren't family meetings, but Angela says on the phone, "We need to have a family meeting when you get home." In this same call, George says the family has spoken. Jake, the family. He's saying the family has spoken. Mom doesn't want her on the complex. I wonder if they had those little tiki torches like they had on Survivor. The tribe has spoken. Again, George is very much in this and dictating and making determinations on the life of his brother and his brother's wife. The first night on Jake and Beth Ann's honeymoon, they consummate the marriage, and then it's give me your passwords. At some point, the family calls a private investigator to get information on Beth Ann. Angela talks about sex with them, and there's nothing that happens in that house that isn't a group decision, and Angela is involved in the most intimate details of her son's life. Beth Ann signed the prenup saying she would not seek custody of Sophia in the event of a divorce. Tabby said when she hit George, he said, "You just signed your divorce papers." Good for her. Hannah Mae texted Jake with a girl emoji with four guns pointed at her head saying, "This is what you won't want." I said won't. "This is what you want." Strong awareness by the girls, and the family won't stop when it comes to the kids. We know Jake is recording Hannah Mae picking up Sophia, and George is there on at least two occasions. It sounds like George is making those comments he made to Sophia just to have it on tape, saying, "Why are you so filthy? Don't they know how to give you a bath? Why say that to a 2.5-year-old child unless you know you're being recorded? You can also hear him say, hurry and leave before Chris and them comes here and tells Jake specifically not to drive by Chris's house. He can't say why he said that. At the border, he says he and Jake run the house at Peterson Road. Well, we could have listened to the border tapes. There was an objection, by the way. My theory on the border tapes, and this is totally just my two cents, we know that it was said, do you want to be a witness or a defendant? I really think that border tape was full of agents telling George, we don't think you did anything. And that's just maybe not something they want the jury to hear. There could be other reasons. I can't think of any other reason why you would not play that border tape. We only heard Angela's. We didn't hear Jake's or Billy's, by the way. But this thing has been talked about throughout this trial, and we don't have anything other than what the prosecutor has said came from those tapes. Why? The judge says to rely on your collective memory as evidence after that objection with the sidebar. When George was on the stand, I asked him what he said at the border, rebuking that Angela was controlling. They said to him at the border, with Angela being so controlling, she probably came up with this whole idea. And George said she isn't controlling and that he and Jake owned the home. She lived with them because she had medical conditions and she watched the kids. He said that before he sat here and needed not to be in cahoots with his family. In other words, he said that at the border, taken up for him. Now it's a different story. How do we know George was involved? I've talked about the things that are common sense. She talks about using circumstantial evidence, and the judge will tell you that it can have the same weight as direct evidence. And she gives the example of, you go to bed, there's no snow on the ground. You wake up, there's snow on the ground. It's reasonable to think it snowed overnight. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence, ballistics, shoe print evidence, silencers, purchases, custody documents. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence that's almost as good as being there and seeing them commit the crimes. I disagree. I think the jury, and I've said this on every live we've done and we broke it down, the jury simply has a choice. Do they believe Jake and Angela or do they believe George? Circumstantial evidence, yeah, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that George knew about this. And I fully believe he went that night. It's just what, when you're taking 12 people from different backgrounds with different beliefs and putting them in a room and telling all of them, you're going to send this man away potentially for the rest of his life with no physical proof, really, other than testimony that he was there that night. And we know George didn't shoot anybody by Jake's own admission. This is going to be a very tense deliberation for me. And the longer it goes on, the more tense I'm going to get. It's going to be a nail biter, guys. We may be doing some lives just to release some steam about this. We have direct evidence of testimony. She then says, pirates who are taking in perfectly innocent civilians, making them walk the plank and plunge to their death. And the only way we know what happened on the ship are the other pirates. You will get instructions on how to weigh the testimony of Jake and Angela. If someone comes up to you and says, it didn't snow last night, yes, it did. She kind of threw that in a little later. Other facts and evidence can be tricky. You can't use it for propensity. Just because I commit a bunch of thefts doesn't make me a murderer. You can use other acts of evidence, all the collective crimes they did as a family. She says, what a way to raise your kids. Here's a dollar for spotting a camera or a cop. She couldn't remember which one it was for. They started to pick locks. Then it progressed to stealing fuel. Then things they needed to keep the farm going. The arsons for insurance. And what it shows is they function as a criminal enterprise. They move items out of the home before they burn it. Jake says he and George were in the house when the turkey was put in the grease. George says he was working on his truck and was against the idea, but he got his stuff out of the house. They forged fake receipts to cover it up, and George was a lookout when they were stealing fuel. Those things you're allowed to consider as his identity as part of the criminal enterprise. So, what's some circumstantial evidence that George participated? George didn't have to pull the trigger. Jake pled to all eight counts, even though he only pulled the trigger on five. And Angela said she was guilty of the murders because she was complicit. You will hear in the complicity instructions, you don't have to be there to be complicit. Angela said in the letter, and I believe this might have been the one to Frederica we did not hear, or maybe to her mom. I don't know which one. She didn't clarify. Don't believe the news. I pled guilty, but I wasn't there, but I was complicit. The shoes are a big piece of circumstantial evidence. You heard from Suzanne Elliott about the crime scene, and there were prints in blood from one of the people who committed the offenses. She figured out the shoes and that we had two sizes, a 10 and a half and 11. The problem is the jury's never heard what size shoe George is. It's really some open-ended things that I think might trip this jury up in deliberations. There's just been some things that were never answered. I don't understand why they couldn't have got his foot measurement from when BCI had his foot measured. Why wasn't that brought in and say he wore a 12 or 11 and a half? Because if you remember, supposedly Angela got the shoes a half size smaller than they actually were to throw investigators off. Why his foot size wasn't brought in, I have no clue. We know we have a 10 and a half and an 11 in blood. She shows the diagram of the evidence at Chris Sr.'s house. It's the one that shows where the ballistics were, the drag marks. And she says, points to evidence photo marker 23 and 47. Those are the size 11s. They were kind of near the front door. And 24, marker 24 was the size 10 and a half. So I'm going to stop here. We're 30 minutes in. Got another 30 minutes to finish this one out. So look for that here in a bit. And we will see you soon, guys.